weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to the two Johnnies in Africa for the afternoon entertainment. It is Thursday, April 4th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Bernard Jackman is in studio to look ahead at this weekend's Champions Cup and Challenge Cup matches as all four Irish provinces feature. Kilkenny and Clare square off in this year's Hurling League final. So Ursula Jacob will be previewing that one. We'll be dialing into Fergal Brennan at Anfield to discuss the midweek Premier League fixtures, and Maeve de Burke previews the Ireland Women's National Team's European qualifiers. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening, welcome along to Game On. It is great to have your company on this Thursday evening. And we're treating this evening a bit like a Friday. We're going to be preview central today because tomorrow Game On is coming live at 8pm instead of the usual 6pm. We have live coverage of France versus Ireland in Metz. So we will have live analysis, expert analysis, live commentary all through the evening from 8pm tomorrow evening. So that is why we're going to be looking ahead at a big weekend of sport this evening. There is a big weekend in the Premier League. However, there's a big night also in the Premier League, and Fergal Brennan is currently at Anfield ahead of Liverpool versus Sheffield United. Chelsea, Manchester United also on this evening. Should be straightforward enough for Liverpool this evening, Fergal? No, the line in Anfield perhaps isn't just there, so we will be going to Fergal very shortly. Ahead of this evening, Jurgen Klopp was speaking on Irish goalkeeper, I should say, Caoimhín Kelleher. Here's the Liverpool manager's thoughts.
Hi, Caoimhín Kelleher. He plays his next game. He's played the same amount of games as Alisson has this season, 24. So this is his longest spell in the Liverpool team. Has he even improved over this spell? And it seems like a seamless transition, doesn't it?
Yeah. Look, if you would have asked me before the season, I think I was never shy of praising Caoimhín. So, but for example, it can take Caoimhín Ali out for a long spell. So would have been a bit of a problem, not because Caoimhín, but never, he could never had to play that many games. So you never know how that would look then. So perfect. What happens if Trent is out for a long time? Well, with Joey Connor, obviously then Connor was injured, so Connor picked up from there, then both left backs out. First Robbo out, Kossi steps in, then both out, then Joey steps in the right side. So all these kind of things with how these boys deal with the situation and with the new opportunities is just exceptional. And again, so many players out for a really long time, and we're still where we are. That's pretty special, and you cannot expect that. You hope for these kind of things, you cannot expect it. And I'm absolutely over the moon, happy for the boys that they can prove their point. I was never in doubt about them, but they still have to prove it themselves. And so that's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely outstanding season. Without Caoimhín Kelleher, no chance to be in the position we are.
So that was Liverpool manager Jurgen Klopp speaking this week ahead of a big match this evening. Liverpool can, of course, go back top of the Premier League if they do defeat Sheffield United. Fergal Brennan does join us now. Fergal, we're going to blame dodgy Wi-Fi at Anfield. Nothing to do with us. It's all Anfield's fault. You are at Anfield, as I did mention there. And my question to you, not to be brazen, but it should be a handy enough one for Liverpool this evening.
It should. You can throw the weather in as a bit of an excuse. The rain has just started hammering down outside, so that could have possibly messed things up a little bit. It should be straightforward, obviously, in terms of reacting from last night with Manchester City beating Aston Villa, and then a little bit before that, Arsenal beating Luton. Liverpool up against the team that everybody expects just to slide out of the Premier League in the next few weeks. They've been down in the bottom three for some time, and there's been a couple of little rallies from Sheffield United, but nothing to really suggest they can dig themselves out of it. And as for Liverpool, the form that they're in, particularly at home in the Premier League, I can't see it being anything other than pretty routine. In terms of lineups, there's not been a massive amount of changes in terms of injuries, but I think he will rotate and rest a couple of players because it will be a difficult game against United this weekend.
Given the fact that Manchester City and Arsenal had comfortable victories last night over Aston Villa and Luton respectively, will Liverpool feel any pressure, extra added on pressure as a result of that tonight?
I think it's unavoidable to feel that little bit of extra pressure. But I just think Klopp, particularly when you hear him speaking there just a moment ago, he's so experienced in these type of situations, and so is the majority of the squad. Even some of the players that they've signed this summer do have a lot of experience in terms of pressurised situations in major games, pushing for big trophies. So I don't think it'll be a detrimental issue, let's put it that way. But they will feel it, of course, and that's just the nature of the scheduling. Manchester City play first again this weekend, so Liverpool will be in the same situation again because Arsenal are in the half five against Brighton on Saturday, and then it's Liverpool United on Sunday afternoon. So it's back-to-back pressurised situations for them. But I don't think it will make an enormous impact on them tonight.
I mentioned the two results yesterday. We can hear from Pep Guardiola speaking on Phil Foden because he is just at his brilliant best at the moment.
What can I say when he scores three goals? I think he didn't start well, but I think the goal helped him a lot for the mood in the second half. You know, Phil, when playing central position, have a sense of goal. It's like everyone has his own skills and talents, and Phil has goals, assists and goals in that positions, and he proved it again. He can do whatever he wants. I think he's a really top-class player, we know it, so. But still, he's open-minded, has to understand the game, he has to be focused in the things, especially for the tension. Sometimes he's very, very distraught in exactly what you have to do, offensively, defensively, but he has a natural talent, a gift that is special for the pace, for the work ethic is unbelievable, and after have an incredible sense of goal. You have the sense when you had the ball attacking the last line is, oh, he's going to score. You had that feeling, you know, for the trigger, for the shoot. And it's not easy to find it. And that's why it's so special when playing in these central positions.
Fergal, I know we're in the midst of a proper title charge for three teams. If Manchester City were to go on to be crowned Premier League champions, and that's a big if, I know, for Arsenal and Liverpool fans listening in, how much of that will be attributed to Phil Foden and the form that he's been in?
A huge amount will be put on his shoulders because he's steadily improved his form year on year, and I think this year we're seeing a different role from him, playing centrally, as Pep Guardiola just touched on there, but he still has that flexibility when in certain situations in games, if he has to drift wide or even if he starts in a wider position, he can still cut in, make things happen. And last night against Villa, he was absolutely brilliant. All three of his goals were taken fantastically well. 21 goal involvements, if you add Premier League goals and assists together, that's not too far behind the likes of Salah and Haaland. And particularly when you add in that he doesn't take penalties, he doesn't really take set pieces very often. That's fantastic numbers. His ability to dictate, particularly when there's no Kevin De Bruyne, he was rested last night and he's been out for big spells of the season with injury. He's been sensational for them, and I think there's a bit of a conversation going on that he could be the player of the year at the end of the campaign. I think last season it was very straightforward. Erling Haaland just dominated the Premier League and scored so many goals that it was a bit of a one-horse race. It's not nearly as clear this time round, and those three teams have all got maybe one or two players that have been their leading lights. For me, he's definitely in that group for Manchester City this season. He's been fantastic for them.
Surely there's a bit more of a conversation happening. He has to be in with a shout for player of the year.
I think, yeah. If it was right now, I think he would tip it in terms of voting. Obviously, from the media perspective, we get a vote in the Football Writers Association player. I think I can reveal now, unless I have a change of heart in the next few weeks, I'll be voting for him myself. Because he's been phenomenal, and Haaland has been excellent. But we've seen in certain games, we saw obviously last weekend against Arsenal, where he struggled in patches. He's not been as incredible as last year, and to be fair to him, he was never going to be. But the level has maybe dropped a bit more than we anticipated. And you look through the rest of that Man City team, De Bruyne has been out for a big part of the campaign because of injuries. Julian Alvarez hasn't played as much. Rodri's been excellent, but probably doesn't grab the headlines as much as a Foden. And then from Liverpool and Arsenal, Salah's been his consistent, brilliant self. Bukayo Saka's been excellent for Arsenal, but it's very difficult to make a case that any of them are clearly ahead of Phil Foden in terms of their performances this season.
It does show the strength and depth. I think Phil was celebrating one of his goals last night and went over towards the touchline. I think it was De Bruyne, Haaland and Stones hugging him.
Yeah.
All his substitutes. And like you mentioned, I mean, they're playing Aston Villa, fourth in the table, and they blowed them away 4-1. Even Arsenal last night, no Saka, no Jesus, Rice on the bench. Yet, okay, admittedly, the Luton Town are not fourth in the table, they're 18th, but still, being able to tweak in this busy period when matches are coming thick and fast, and that strength and depth is just incredible from all of the top three teams.
And it's important, particularly at this point in the season. Mikel Arteta was similarly pleased with Emile Smith Rowe for Arsenal. He was very good for them against Luton. And you need these players after the 30 games in the Premier League, particularly if you're in a cup competition or a European cup competition or both. You need your kind of 15 to 20 squad members to step in, cover games, cover injuries, suspensions, and not just be a kind of placeholder. You want them to be motivated to think, well, if I play well in this game and that injury's worse than we thought, or this situation goes on a bit longer, then I'll get a chance in a bigger game. But in order to do that, I've got to perform. And that's what happened with the players that got rotated in for Arsenal and for City. Foden obviously would be a starter in their bigger games, but there was players last night, Rico Lewis, I thought did really well for them, lots of energy, bursting forward, linking defence into midfield. He's somebody that will be thinking, is there a chance? Guardiola loves shuffling things around in big games. Is there a chance that I might get a shout? He's definitely not done himself any harm.
I could not agree with you more. Elsewhere this evening, so we're all expecting Liverpool to get the job done against bottom place Sheffield United, but 12th place Chelsea host 6th place Manchester United. How do you see this one going, Fergal?
It's very difficult because both of them have been wildly inconsistent, just one Premier League in four each. And I think their attentions are firmly focused on the FA Cup now, because they both know they're in with a chance of getting to a final. Obviously, Chelsea's situation is far more difficult. They've got to play Manchester City and United have got Coventry. That will be a backdoor route into Europe for Chelsea, because it's incredibly unlikely that they get there through the league, and it's incredibly unlikely that Man United get into the top four at this stage. Even if it was to be stretched to the fifth place team, I still think it would be difficult for United. Tottenham and Villa, even though they didn't get the results they wanted in midweek, they still have the advantage. I'd probably push for Chelsea. Generally, at home, they are quite strong when they need to be. And United, I keep saying it almost every week when I get asked, you just don't quite know what's going to happen. The Brentford game at the weekend, they didn't get a kick for over 90 minutes, and then they scored in, I think it was after 4 or 5 minutes of injury time, and then they let another one in the 90th minute of injury time. That's the type of thing that happens to Manchester United this season. And I think Chelsea have got a little bit more ruthlessness, particularly with the likes of Cole Palmer, who's in really, really good form. United don't really have a player like him that they can rely on in a kind of clutch moment in a game to just knock in a penalty or take a chance when it falls his way. So I would say Chelsea will just edge it. And then I think the race for top four or potentially top five is done. It's just a scrap between Spurs and Villa as to who gets fourth and absolutely confirms himself Champions League football.
Okay, good stuff. Fergal Brennan, enjoy Anfield this evening. Thanks so much for taking the call. Our football conversation continues because Maeve de Burke is on the line to preview France-Ireland tomorrow. Before we chat to Maeve, though, we can hear from Courtney Brosnan, Ireland goalkeeper, who was speaking with our own Tony O'Donoghue.
When the draw happened, where were you, by the way?
I was just at home in my apartment, so I immediately got a text from a friend that plays for Sweden, so I knew that we had them, and then saw the France and England, so it was quite funny.
When you assessed your own form recently, obviously we had the World Cup, we've had the games since, you continue to improve, it seems. I mean, you know, Courtney Brosnan is playing at the peak of her powers, people might say now.
I'm very happy, obviously, with the progress I've made in the national team, obviously at club as well. I think I come into every camp and every game just wanting to do my best for the team, and whatever that role is, try to do my best to fulfill that.
Of course, it's a defensive unit, not just a goalkeeper, and there have been changes in front of you. How difficult is that from a keeper's point of view?
Listen, I think we have a great group of girls, the whole group, but especially the defenders, in my opinion. I think we're really adaptable. That's something Eileen's talked about a lot, how we need to adapt to different challenges on the pitch, off the pitch. So I think, yeah, that's something that comes with football. There's always going to be injuries or changes, different people playing, and you have a relationship and you're able to talk through things with everyone. So I think that's something we've been quite good at.
In the Nations League games, we did so well under Eileen, scored goals for fun, you might say. Maybe your role wasn't as necessary in those type of games. Can you imagine having a more important role to play against the likes of France and against the likes of England?
Yeah, I think when I come into every game internationally in a club, I just try to do whatever role is asked of me, whether that's making no saves, one save, or 20 saves, just anything I can do to help us get results. So obviously playing these tough teams, yeah, it might be a bit of a busier week, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Concentrate for me on France in particular and the firepower that they have up front.
Yeah, I think obviously there's no doubt in how well they did and obviously making to the finals in the Nations League, losing to Spain. I think we know from playing them before the World Cup how strong they are, and obviously they've only grown stronger and probably better since then. But yeah, they have some great attackers, wingers, some quality in the box, so it'll be a tough test for us.
It most certainly will be a tough test for the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Remember, Eileen Gleeson mentioned today that they are there to win. We are coming here to compete and to try and win the game, affect the game in whatever way we can. That has to be the starting point. We are coming to win the game. Strong words from Eileen Gleeson. Is that exactly what you want to hear ahead of what is going to be a tough test, Maeve de Burke?
Exactly, yeah, it's good to hear. She's been positive anyway, and sure, rightly so. I mean, why not? They've nothing to lose at the same time. Like I said, in this kind of qualifying group at the end, you'll be guaranteed a playoff in any case. So I'm sure they won't be going all out attack now. You know, as much as she does want to win, I think they'll be very conservative in their approach. I'd expect five at the back again and really sit in, and then just it's about how do we transition and try to counterattack the French.
Yeah, Anthony Pyne earlier in the week was alluding to that perhaps we'll be a bit more pragmatic. It might be a throwback to tactics of the past that perhaps we saw in the World Cup as well. But it's necessary, Maeve.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can't go out. You have to give France the respect that they deserve. You know, obviously them, England and Sweden are ranked far above us in the rankings. So you have to kind of approach the game, you know, in a realistic way as well. And, you know, Eileen's been around the block. She knows how to set up. I'm sure they'll you know, approach it like they would have in the games similar to the World Cup under Vera. You know, I would expect a similar approach where, you know, they're obviously going to have the ball a lot more than we're going to have it. And just, yeah, like I said, then it's kind of how can we try to, I think, make better use of the ball when we do have it, because we know that traditionally we've always been kind of defensively solid. So I think it's kind of just that other side of the game then to work on as well.
Given the fact a large chunk of this France squad is made up of players from Paris Saint-Germain and Lyon, two powerhouses who are going to collide in the Women's Champions League semi-finals later this month. However, do you have that feeling of positivity that this won't be as one-sided as perhaps a lot of people think?
I think so. I mean, maybe that's just kind of the sports woman in me that always has a bit of a positivity going into any game. You know, you'd never be expecting to lose, but and I'm sure the girls tomorrow night, you know, they'll be well drilled and they'll be confident within the camp of getting a result. Obviously, people outside the camp won't be expecting anything but a French win. But I mean, I suppose nowadays with the amount of analysis and everything that can be done, that you can really try to, I suppose you can try your best anyway to counteract the threats that they have. But I suppose when it comes to France, you just have threats in so many areas of the park that it is going to be very difficult to shut them down. I think the Sommer in particular up front, she's, you know, France's all-time leading goal scorer. And I think she's going to be a real handful, as she proved in Dublin when we played them before. We played them in the last warm-up friendly before the World Cup. So, we'll be under no illusions what's to unfold, I suppose. But hopefully we can just cope with it well.
Just the 93 goals for France for Eugenie Lassomer, which is just wild. But they do have such big names like Wendy Reynard, Diani Lassomer, as you mentioned there as well. They just got so much talent across the park. How do we get at them? Like, how will we try and get in their faces? Will we try and make it a bit physical for them, or what were you expecting to see?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if physicality will work against the likes of Reynard. She's just so powerful herself, but yeah, I mean, I think we're just going to sit in defensively, compact, kind of keep the gaps between the lines close and try just make the pitch as small as possible. And then, you know, really, I suppose, just try counterattack and really aim for set pieces, because, you know, that is one of our strengths. Obviously, we know the quality McCabe has with her deliveries, and Connolly as well on the other side. And then, you know, we've always, I suppose, known about Quint and Louise, and even the French coach, Hervé Renard, he mentioned the set pieces as been one of our main threats. But I think the kind of emergence of Caitlin Hayes as well just adds that extra kind of variety, because she's been able to score regularly for Celtic. So, you know, I think set pieces really will be a huge kind of part of the game for us tomorrow night.
Are there any weaknesses in the French team that we might be able to unearth?
I'm sure they'll have found some with a deep analysis that maybe they might be able to try to, you know, I suppose one thing is that they do like to attack, particularly off the left side. They can commit players forward. So, like I already alluded to, if we can counter-attack but do it at speed, who knows? You know, there might be slight complacency given the fact they really outplayed us last year and, you know, were far the better team that day. So, you know, there's going to be always that in their subconscious that they'll be expected to win and win well tomorrow night. So, who knows, maybe if they do overcommit and have that slight overconfidence, that maybe it might be something that we can target.
One small bit of hope as well that we might take is the imminent departure of the French manager, Yves Renard. So he dropped, it was pretty much a bombshell last month when he announced he would leave his post after the Olympic Games. Might that be a negative factor for France, that there might be a bit... I'm clutching at straws somewhat to say disorganisation, but it might affect the French players in some way.
Yeah, I mean, it could possibly, but I suppose, like you already mentioned, they're all professional, they're playing at such a high level with their clubs, and, you know, they would have kind of come across sort of these scenarios before in a way, and, you know, even Reynard himself, he is kind of quite a journeyman. He's taken up a lot of different roles in recent years, so I suppose he'd know how to kind of, you know, have the mindset right to going into it. But yeah, I mean, if it's something we can clutch at and try to somehow use to our advantage, then all the better.
If we can keep it goalless, perhaps first 30 minutes, do you think France might get frustrated?
I think so. That's the main aim always, is just to stay in the game for as long as possible. And that's obviously keeping the score to nil all or to even within a goal. So yeah, I think that will be the focus, is just to not do anything kind of stupid, I suppose, early on, and just stick to the game plan that they'll have, you know, they've had the week together, so they'll be well drilled. It's not such a quick turnaround like you know, their complete focus would have been on this game in particular. So I think as well, it's important, just, you know, in the context of the whole group, that we don't, you know, get completely I suppose outplayed or that as well. If we can just try to put in a good performance, and like I said, you know, there isn't really an expectation in terms of points, getting points in the group, but you would hope, I mean, everyone would hope that we can pull off some upsets along the way. And I think, you know, if they were to pull one off tomorrow night, it would really be the best possible way to start off the campaign.
Oh, for sure. When you hear Eileen Gleeson saying we're coming to win the game, even Denise O'Sullivan a while back when the draw was made, I think it was on social media, of we wanted to be here, now we are, let's have it. Like, how much will they be relishing this opportunity?
Oh, they'll be buzzing for it. I mean, like, the Nations League was fine, but no one really wants to be going out and playing lesser teams. They want to be challenging themselves against the best in the world, and that's what they're going to do. You know, on Friday and again then on Tuesday, you know, we really can't get much higher ranked opposition, you know. So there, yeah, that's what they play for, you know. Like Leicester City, she's obviously playing at a really high level in the American League, and the girls playing in the WSL too, but it's just, I suppose, other girls then might be playing at the same level as the Lyon and the PSG players are playing at week in and week out, and it's just whether we can kind of, you know, bridge that gap and just try to stay with them for the 90 minutes.
I'm not going to put you on the spot and ask for a score prediction as the last question, but I will phrase it as, they'll put in a performance that we'll be proud of. Is that what you're hoping for, expecting?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. They'll always do that. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't put a scoreline on it, but I think we could snatch a draw. I mean, why not? You know, like the girls, like I said, they've been well organised. It's really kind of Eileen's first competitive challenge, really, because you couldn't really have classified the Nations League as too much of a challenge for them. So, yeah, it's just really exciting, and it's one to really look forward to. And, you know, on a Friday night too, it'll be great to get numbers out watching it.
Absolutely. And for those who can't attend or can't watch it on the television, we will have live coverage here from 8 p.m. on a special Game On live commentary of France-Ireland. For now, Maeve de Burka, thank you so much for taking the call. Very much looking forward to France versus Ireland in Metz tomorrow evening. Bernie Jackman is still to come on rugby, but up next, I'll be chatting to Ursula Jacob as we look ahead at Kilkenny and Clare in this year's league final.
Game On.
Hurling.
Now it is time to chat hurling and preview this weekend's Division 1 League final between Kilkenny and Clare in Semple Stadium in what is unfortunately going to be a rain-sodden Semple Stadium, judging by the weather reports at this early stage, Ursa, which is extremely unfortunate because this was built to be a full-blooded encounter, championship intensity, and it might now be affected by a bit of rain and a bit of wind.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be more than just a bit of rain and wind because the way it's looking out my window at the moment, it's not looking too good. But yeah, and I suppose even, you know, Semple Stadium has been out of action the last number of weeks as well. And I think there is a minor game possibly tonight in the championship as well. So it'll be interesting to see how the pitch, you know, the condition of it, the impact it can have on the game. You know, it may not be as free-flowing. Will there be more freeze than expected? So, yeah, I think it might have a bearing on the game. It is a pity because I think we're all probably looking forward to this game. You know, a lot of people probably would have been expecting that it was going to be Limerick in the final. But Kilkenny, as they've done many times before, proved a lot of people wrong. And we have a really interesting game, I think, to look forward to.
Yeah, are these the two form teams in the country? Are these the two best teams at the moment meeting in the final?
Yeah, well, look, sure, they're there and they're there in Murrett. I suppose Clare are unbeaten and Kilkenny have only lost one game and that was to Clare. So, yeah, they've come through their, you know, they were both obviously in the same side of the league in the same group. So they've met already. And as I said, Clare got the upper hand that day. And maybe there was a little bit of hurt in Clare that day that they wanted to maintain their record against beating Kilkenny over in Ennis. But I suppose also the hurt of losing the last two All-Ireland semi-finals. And no doubt that might crop into a few of the players' minds on Saturday evening as well, because, you know, everyone is saying Clare are the nearest team to potentially knocking Limerick off the top spot. But for the past 2 years, you know, Kilkenny have managed to, when the pressure has come on, stood up to that challenge and, you know, have beaten Clare. So that's the challenge. I think there's possibly more pressure on Clare going into this game because if not, people will possibly say, you know, Clare, are they progressing? Are they where they need to be ahead of championship? You know, this is the fifth year of Brian Lowen and there's been no silverware. You know, they've lost two Munster finals, lost two All-Ireland semi-finals. So I think it's really, really vital for Clare, even more so than Kilkenny, to get the win on Saturday evening, especially when they're going to be facing Limerick in 2 weeks' time in the championship.
Before we talk about the matchups this weekend, who has managed the league better in terms of unearthing players who might be important in the summer?
Well, I think you'd have to say hats off to Brian Lowen and Clare that, you know, Tony Kelly hasn't featured, Shane O'Donnell, Ryan Taylor, David McInerney, I think, has only featured once. So they're down some big, big names, but yet they've filtered in some new guys who have really stood up and, you know, probably are going to stake a claim in the championship team in 2 weeks' time. You know, some of the guys, like you look at Keith Smith the last day, got two super points early on in the semi-final, Sean Ryan, Darrell Owen, you know, and then some of the guys like Adam Hogan, who obviously featured last year as well, is continuing his really strong vein of form in defence. And then some of the other guys who are born leaders on this team, you know, David Fitzgerald possibly has been the standout player for me in this league. I think his performances throughout the group stages and in the semi-final again against Tipperary have been outstanding. So I think Brian Lowen will be happy where he is. The fact that he's reached the league final without two, if not three, of his most important and influential players. So I think he'll be very, very happy. On the flip side, you'd have to say that Derek Ling, I think, has potentially built a stronger panel this year. I think there's an added freshness in the Ballyhale guys. You know, the fact that they got knocked out, you know, in the club championship meant that the likes of TJ, Owen Cody, Adrian Mullen allowed themselves to get that little bit of a rest. And I think they're coming back, you know, really in flying form. And then obviously the addition of Mikey Carey. So I think both Kilkenny and Clare have got a lot from this league. And I think they'll go full throttle for this league final because neither of them are going to meet in the round robin of the Munster or Leinster Championship. So I think we won't see any kind of shadow boxing. I think they'll be going all out to win this.
Well, here's hoping in that regard. In terms of matchups and individual battles and contests, what are you most looking forward to seeing on Saturday night?
Yeah, well, I suppose I'd be very interested to see how, I suppose, how, you know, Kilkenny set up, or Clare set up in relation to, I felt that last year in March, they pushed up and pressed up on Kilkenny, particularly in the defence. That's when Clare started dominating in the game. Again, if you look at Clare and Kilkenny in the league in Ennis, Clare piled on the pressure and pressed up on the Kilkenny defence, and Kilkenny struggled to deal with Clare's movement, with their pace. And we saw, you know, Richie Reid did come off that day, and there's question marks over who's the best fit for the centre-back position for Kilkenny, and that's very un-Kilkenny. Like, usually they'd have their kind of spine of their team very well settled, but you know, I expect they'll probably start Paddy Deegan again. But we saw David Reedy was centre-forward against Kilkenny in the league, and Richie Reid struggled on him because David Reedy pressed up on him. He didn't stand off. So I'm really intrigued to see that. And it'll be interesting, you know, as well, I suppose, picking up the main guys. You know, will we see the battle of maybe Adam Hogan and Owen Cody, who are both in really, really flying form? I think, you know, Adam Hogan is such a tenacious and tough defender, and then Owen Cody, you know, is at the top of his game as well. So I think that there's going to be huge battles all over. You know, as I said, I think David Fitzgerald has probably been the most influential player throughout this league. I think he's just an immense force. You know, he works brilliantly, you know, whether he's midfield or based on the half forward line. And Kilkenny are going to have to be very, very wary of this, because he can not only score himself, but he's a brilliant player to lay off a ball to someone running on the shoulder. So I think we're going to have some really intriguing battles, and both teams are getting to know each other pretty good over the last year or two. So you know, Brian Lowen and Derek Ling no doubt will have their homework done too.
Clare's win in this league campaign perhaps was a welcome counterbalance to the last two All-Ireland semi-finals, both won by Kilkenny. Like, this is going to be a physical battle. There's not going to be much between the sides. Like, neither side will blow each other away.
Without a doubt, you know, I think this is going to be a closely contested game. I think there'll be, you know, possibly a point or two between the teams. I don't think either team are really going to, you know, dominate and beat them by 8, 9, 10 points. I think it's going to be a closely contested game. You know, the conditions, as we said, could play a factor in this, because, you know, I think one thing Clare probably would have been disappointed in their league semi-final against Tip was their tackling at times probably let them down. You know, they gave away 19 frees, and Tip were completely off form on their free taking. But if you give away 19 frees to a team like Kilkenny, you've either got TJ Reid or Billy Drennan to step up and slot those balls over the bar. So they're going to have to, you know, be disciplined in the tackle. There's no point in being hyped up and worked up about, you know, and being physical against a team like Kilkenny. You have to manage that discipline as well, and I think that's going to be crucial on Saturday evening. But yeah, like I'm really looking forward to the game. I think we'll get a good idea where both teams are at, you know, ahead of the championship as well. I suppose, you know, I think there should be a good pace to the game. I think there should be good intensity. And as I said, look, it's a national title at the end of the day. You know, albeit no one is really going to look back on who won the league when it comes to the All-Ireland Championship later on in the year. But I think this can do a lot for either team in terms of confidence, momentum going into the championship. So I think it has a little bit more bearing on things than, you know, oh, it's only the league, oh, it's only a league final. I think it'll be important for both teams in different ways to get the win on Saturday.
So, who's going to prevail?
That's the tough question. And I suppose I probably would have been one of those people who possibly said, oh, I think Clare would have won the last two All-Ireland semi-finals. You know, I thought they would have had the upper hand on Kilkenny, but Kilkenny just seemed to find a way, you know, and they deal with those kind of pressure situations. And I suppose I was so impressed with him against Limerick in the league semi-final. You know, we all know that maybe wasn't the best performance out of Limerick, but there was so much positive in what Kilkenny did that day and how threatening they were up front, and even the route one hurling that they went with, you know, the long direct balls into the danger area. So for me, I possibly think Kilkenny might tip it 1 or 2 points, because I do feel that Clare possibly brought out 2 or 3 of their main guys, like Tony and Shane O'Donnell and Ryan Taylor, and I just think Kilkenny might have that little bit more up front come Saturday.
Okay, well, here's hoping for a cracker in Semple Stadium. Ursula Jacob, for now, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Hurling.
Game on.
Rugby.
Now we're finishing this evening's show chatting rugby, and Bernard Jackman joins me. And Bernard, there's a lot to get through. All 4 Irish provinces are in action this weekend, either in the Champions Cup or the Challenge Cup. Let us begin our conversation speaking about Munster, who are away to Northampton at 12:30 on Sunday. And the reason I'm starting with Munster is a couple of news headlines today. John Ryan suspended for 3 games. We will get to that in due course. However, Anton Friche has said today in an interview with L'Equipe, "I have been in contact with Fabien Galthié for a long time, and this contact has never been interrupted. From the moment I was called into the France group, it became very clear to me I want to play for France. It's where I grew up. I had a Le Bleu poster on the walls of my room as a child." How big of a headache is this for Munster with the Irish qualified overseas rules about your players and squads?
Yeah, this is a big, big problem for Munster. Obviously, they had to let Orgie Snyman go to Leinster this summer. Obviously, John Klein was Irish qualified, but by declaring back for South Africa, he became non-Irish qualified. So they made a choice between John Klein and Orgie Snyman. And their first choice centre partnership is Alex Nankivell and Anton Friche. But Anton Friche was Irish qualified, being part of Andy Farrell's squad that went to South Africa last year on a development tour. And obviously, Nankivell is non-Irish qualified, so it's unlikely Munster, or the RFU, would be best pleased about Munster having 2 non-Irish qualified centres, which at the moment he's saying he's going to declare for France. He hasn't been capped as such yet, so technically he's still Irish qualified as well, but you would imagine that you'd imagine that the top 14 clubs will now come and try and sign him, and whether Munster can get a transfer fee. He's under contract till 2025 to ease the pain. But with that statement today, my reading of it is this is only going one way, and it's Anton Friche leaving Irish rugby and going to play his club rugby in France, which would increase his chances of playing for France. Like, the reality is France don't have a hard and fast rule around players playing abroad, but of the current squad and last year's squad and the year before, none of them have played outside France. So, and Anton Friche is in a very deep pool of players trying to get game time for France in the centre position. So you would imagine he will look to go home this summer. And Munster's potential options now are limited to how much they can get a transfer fee. Or they can hold him to his contract.
Would Munster want to get rid of him, though?
They won't want to get rid of him in terms of his quality as a player. But
if he becomes capped by France, then he then takes a spot of an overseas player.
Yeah, I think that's a big choice for them, because obviously they already have Nankivell and they have Jean Klein. And, you know, there's lots of talk that they're brilliantly to get Ollie Yeager, and he's obviously Irish qualified, and he's someone who was outside our system for a long time. Obviously, haven't played the Crusaders. But the reality is, you would say Munster, if they need to strengthen, probably need another, you know, some more front row players, and they're probably not going to get an Irish qualified player in that position. So they may need to use their foreign player spot elsewhere. So it's very unlucky. It's horrible for Munster, because they'd had a great coup by getting him, and now that they may have to let him go is hard.
Well, let's hear from Munster coach Dennis Sleamy speaking about 2 Irish players, Conor Murray, I should say, and Peter O'Mahony.
Yeah, you can never tell the longevity of anyone's career, obviously, with the nature of the sport we play. But what was obvious from the very start was the talent he had and his ability, his calmness, his decision-making, his work ethic. And through that sort of application to his game, he's improved over the years. And, you know, he's had a tremendous career for Munster, Ireland, the Lions. One of the best players, certainly, that I played with and of the last 25 years, I'd have to say. Yeah, incredible talent.
The other one that we're still waiting to hear about is Peter O'Mahony. Is there any white smoke imminent about a decision?
That's still ongoing, but I'm led to believe there'll be white smoke very soon.
RT Sports, Neil Tracy with the questions there. Are you led to believe that there'll be white smoke?
Yeah, no, look, I think it's I think everything's back on track, which is great.
Good.
Look, I think this, it's unfortunate the way it all played out, but obviously it is difficult for provinces to readjust. Players are coming off a centrally contracted contract and obviously aren't on their wage bill per se, and then trying to find a budget for them. So you're basically having to find money for two players you've had for a long time and not have to pay for them in Connor and Pete. So look, at Dennis, I think Dennis probably knows more than he's letting on. So I think his soundbite there is very promising from a Munster point of view.
If you're getting that soundbite, he definitely knows something more than he's letting on. News today, as I mentioned, John Ryan suspended for 3 games. He was cited for a clear out against Cardiff, which was a yellow card, which has since been upgraded, basically. How big a blow is that?
It's a big blow because, obviously, Ollie Yeager is injured. Roman Salanoa is also injured, so that's 3 of your first 4 choice tight heads. So big pressure on Stephen Archer. Look, it was a tip tackle in a clear out. At the time, I thought he was lucky to get yellow, and obviously the siding officer felt the same. So that is a blow for Munster going across to Northampton. Northampton have a very good scrum. Archer, in fairness, has never let Munster down. But just you would like to have Yeager or John Ryan in particular to come and share the workload. So that is a blow to Munster in what's a huge challenge for him.
Not just Northampton's scrum and their front row. In broader context, how big of a challenge is this going to be for Munster this weekend?
Look, over the last probably 4 or 5 years, we've kind of become used to talking up English teams, and then when they come up against an Irish province in a big European game, they've kind of flattered to deceive bar Saracens. But there is a feeling this year that with the 3 teams going out of business and those players, the best players from those teams, strengthening the other 9, that things have changed. Obviously, England finished the Six Nations in a better form. There was some very strong performances from Northampton players at the core of that. It's Courtney Laws last season, having played his whole career with Northampton, so there's the emotional charge there. It's at home. They beat Munster and Thomond Park. So, yeah, there's a lot of things in their favour. But you just, with Munster, they've always managed to find an extra 15-20% in Europe. And it's a horrible thing to have to be going back to the well all that time. You'd rather they were consistent week in, week out. But it is a nice, I suppose, ace to have up your sleeve in a week like this where you can say, look, lads, we've been here before. We get better in Europe. We love a challenge. We're going away to an English club and we've got a point to prove. And RG Snyman will be fit to play, which is a game changer for them. So I wouldn't write Munster off, but it would be a good scalp for them because Saints are playing good rugby, beat Saracens at the weekend. Franklin's Garden would be humming, and it'll be a proper challenge.
It's going to be a proper challenge. Will Munster overcome that challenge?
Yeah, I think they will. I think the likes of Jack Crowley and Pete O'Mahony, etc., they will make sure Munster are in the right headspace, and Tadhg Byrne and RG Snyman is the difference. If he plays 60 minutes, I think he'll be catalyst for a Munster win.
Okay, so you're going for a Munster win. That one, as I mentioned, 12:30 on Sunday away to Northampton. Leinster are playing at home in the Aviva Stadium to Leicester on Saturday evening, 8 p.m. Kickoff for that one. Leinster to beat the Bulls back to their best, particularly in the second half. Is everything just falling into place now ahead of this Leicester?
Yeah, look, I think for Leo and Jacques Nienaber, it's always a challenge to try and get those internationals back into a blue jersey and get them playing the Leinster way quickly enough, but also give them some time off after a busy Six Nations for a lot of them. So the Bulls' performance would lead you to believe that they're right bang there physically, mentally, collectively, and it was probably the best performance they've had this season because it was a good Bulls team and they found it difficult for the first 35 minutes, but you know, 7 tries in total, and their attacking game looked to be very dangerous and very cohesive. So yeah, Leicester, big ask. I watched Leicester the weekend against Newcastle. They won with 12 players, in fairness, but you know,
They won with 12.
Yeah,
players.
12 in the end. 12 in the end, and then 2 came back on. The match went on for 104 minutes. It was just chaos. Oh, in fairness, they ended the match on their own goal line. But to be fair, Newcastle haven't won a match this year, so
okay,
it's a win in difficult circumstances. But the form wouldn't be great. And look, they've been here before and got well beaten by Leinster. So yeah, I don't think anyone is really predicting anything but a Leinster win, and I would be on the same view.
Is that when teams might slip up when you're looking past that challenge?
Yeah, obviously, of course. But like, in fairness, I don't think Leinster have been... Leinster haven't won European Cups because of complacency. They just ran into, very good Saracens and La Rochelle teams over the last couple of years. It's nothing to do with complacency. Just on the day they were beaten. And when you now look at... When you looked at that Saracens team of whatever, four years ago, it was full of some of the stars of the world game. And Racing now La Rochelle are now the same. I mean, La Rochelle is jam-packed with quality players that we didn't know a lot about 3 years ago are now mainstays of the French team, you know. So that's what you're up against. But I don't think Leicester are the same level of quality as La Rochelle.
What will the deciding factor be, or is it just a case of Leinster have too much for Leicester across the park?
Yeah, look, I think it's probably too much across the park, and even we saw at the weekend Leinster's bench, you know, being able to bring Gibson Park, Dan Sheen, Tyke Furlong off the bench. Leicester wouldn't have that level, and even if those lads start, it's the Dan Sheen, it's the Ronan Kellers, etc., that can come on and make an impact. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Ryan Baird, Jason Jenkins. Like, they will have huge quality in their 23, and that's something that probably no other team can compete with Leinster. Not just the 0 to 23, but 23 to 33 or 34, Leinster are very strong.
Okay, that is in the Champions Cup. So you were predicting Leinster and Munster victories in the Champions Cup. In the Challenge Cup, Ulster are away to Montpellier, 12:30 on Sunday, and at 5:30 on Sunday, Connacht are away to Pau. So starting with Connacht, defeat against Benetton last weekend. How will they respond, and what challenge do their opponents pose this weekend?
Look, on form, actually, that's not a bad performance, because Benetton are having a good season. Connacht should have won. They should have closed out the game, got conceded a try in the last minute. And it was on the back of a shocking home performance against Lyon, where they shipped 40 points. So I think the coaches will be happy that they got a reaction, obviously without 4 points, only got 1 point. And they're in a tricky position in the URC. Pau is a chance, I suppose. It's a cup competition, it's a knockout. It's a different environment. But Pau have been playing really, really good rugby and are on track to make Europe, qualify for Europe in the top 14 themselves, which is unusual for them. Usually they're trying to stay up. So Pau are a good side, and I think they will want to put on a bit of a show this weekend, keep the momentum that they've had from the top 14, and I think it's a big ask for Connacht. Having said that, Connacht will have, you would imagine, the team's not picked yet, but Bundy at key and Finney beat him to come back in, and you know, that could be that always has a big influence on them. But still, I think Pau probably have a bit too much momentum.
On the French teams, how much emphasis will Pau and Montpellier put on the European competition?
Yeah, so moving on to Montpellier, I would be shocked to put any.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they're in a relegation battle. They had a very poor start to the season. They actually would have started the season thinking about potentially winning the top 14, and now they're looking over their shoulders thinking, will we stay up? So that's a really nice fixture for Munster to have. It looks really hard on paper. It would be hard any other year, but because of the trouble Montpellier are potentially in the top 14, I think their heads will be completely focused on that, and it would give Richie Murphy a great chance to get, I suppose, an away win, a scalp on his interim coaching position in Ulster.
Is a cup run exactly what Ulster need?
Yeah, I think so. Like, imagine they got to a final or could win a bit of silverware.
Could they go all the way?
Yeah, they'd have to improve a bit, but certainly in the Challenge Cup, their squad would compete with most. And as I said, sometimes the French can be a little bit distracted at this stage. Obviously, when you get to semi-final, final, and everyone wants to win it, but this would be a big one for them. And I think it would, for Richie and I suppose any decision around who the future coach of Ulster is, it could be a really nice blow to land.
Okay, good stuff. So you're going Leinster win, Munster win, Ulster win.
Yeah, and Connacht loss.
Well, here's hoping for four big performances from Irish provinces. Bernie Jackman, thank you very much for popping into the studio. As I mentioned there, Leinster-Leicester, 8 p.m. Saturday, 12:30 Sunday, Northampton, Munster, and then in the Challenge Cup on Sunday, Montpellier, Ulster, 12:30 and 5:30, Pau and Connacht. Sinead, that is all we have time for. A massive thank you to Ronan Lawler and to Taran O'Sullivan for working on this evening's show. Betta Da Silva is up next with some cracking music before we check in first with the news desk. Don't forget, tomorrow, Game On is coming live 8 p.m. We have live coverage of France versus Ireland in the European qualifiers. Here's hoping for a big performance from Eileen Gleeson's Girls in Green. From myself and all of the Game On team, have a good evening, and it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.